So welcome everyone to the Who and What is SRE panel. My name is Jennifer Petoff. I'm a program manager for site reliability engineering at Google, and I'm based in the office in Dublin, Ireland, as opposed to Dublin, California. So really, really happy to be here today. In addition to my general program management responsibilities, I'm also one of the four co-editors of the SRE book that we just released this week, so super, super excited about that. Yay. Thanks, everybody. I'm also joined by a number of esteemed colleagues in the industry here, representing a wide range of companies, a wide range of experiences, and looking forward to chatting with them today. There's a number of ways we could have run this panel. So we could have, you know, gone down the line here and simply asked people, you know, what is it that you do at Netflix versus what is it that you do at Pinterest or Facebook or Dropbox or Google? But that's focusing on the differences, and I think we'd like to use this panel to help us find some common ground in the industry in terms of what it actually means to be a site reliability engineer. So in terms of format, what we'll do is we'll do quick intros, and then I have a few softball questions that I'll send out to the panelists, but really this is about you, our audience. If you do have questions at any point, we have a mic in the aisle. If you have difficulty getting to the mic, it's a fairly packed house today. I can also bring one of the handhelds around, but the preference would be to go to the aisle mic if at all possible. Great, shall we crack on and start with intros? I'll start with Dave here.
My name is Dave Hahn. I'm an SRE at the SRE team at Netflix. Netflix is a telemetry company that has the byproduct of streaming movies and videos.
Hi, my name is Craig Sebenick, and I work at a small startup called Matterport, but I worked at LinkedIn for several years.
Hi, I'm Andrew Fong. I'm a director of engineering at Dropbox. I'm also on the steering committee for SREcon.
Hi, my name is Jeremy Carroll, and I'm a site reliability engineer at Pinterest.
My name is Noel Murphy. I run Ads SRE in Dublin, Ireland, as you could probably tell from my voice. And I'm also one of the instigators and editors and so on of the SRE book.
Hi, I'm Brian. I'm a production engineer. We'll get into that later. I work on the monitoring team at Facebook.
Great, thank you. Short and sweet, all within our SLO. Okay, so... So to start off, what does SRE do in your opinion? Does anybody want to take that one? No one's like, no. And I know. Which, yeah, part of the problem. No, it's, and we even practice. This is interesting. No, well, you didn't, Dave, unfortunately, but yes. He's a last minute substitution.
At least from the Netflix side of things, part of the site reliability engineering group, really, our target is enablement of everybody else. We have a small SRE team of a grand total of 5 people, but the goal of the team is to turn our 1,200 other software engineers into SREs that also happen to develop code. So for us, the big goal of the SRE team is to be enablers for everybody else so that they think about reliability as being one of the primary things that they architect into the software that they put together.
Okay, SREs as enablers, excellent. It looks like Niall has something to say, and then we'll go with Craig.
So I think part of the problem we have as a profession is that there are so many different ways to look at what we do, so many different definitions, and there's, to a certain extent, a lot of that difference played out differently in different companies, right? So one way to look at it is that there's a fixed list of relatively well-scoped responsibilities, performance tuning, resilience, design reviews, reliability generally, I guess. Another way to look at it is that we're responsible for the life cycle of services. We're kind of like specialist doctors or nurses who take services from birth through to peaceful decommissioning safely. We're kind of engineering safe changes. Another way to look at it is, as Dave was saying, that we're responsible for enabling higher velocity on the behalf of product development teams or other bits of the org, precisely because of that orientation towards making safe changes. So there's a lot of different ways to look at what we do.
Craig.
So one of the big differences with me is that I'm at a relatively small company, And startups generally suffer or are guilty of having a very kind of classic operations view early on, where a developer will kind of take on the ops role. And unfortunately, this can often lead to a very, very classic operations, centralized operations team. So one of the big things that my team does is what I call work as consultants to build, release, configuration management, consultants to all the various dev teams. So the goal of my team is to help empower all the developers to figure out what are they doing that they need help with, mostly because in startup, right, we're trying to move very, very quickly. We're making lots of changes. Different teams have different needs that evolve over the course of days or weeks, not months. So my team is there to help them think about these problems, but act as a resource for, hey, I want, in my case, we use Salt. It doesn't really matter. Whatever chosen infrastructure automation tool you have, they're there to be the expert to help them figure out what they want to do and then code it themselves.
Great. Go ahead, Jeremy.
Yeah, one way we kind of like to think about it is that an individual that's really focused on the customer, you know, looking at the speed, the velocity, and the resilience of the systems, ultimately focusing on end users.
My title is production engineer, and we do a lot of the same things as SRE. I mean, in some ways, the role is fairly equivalent. One of the differences is that production engineering is distributed throughout the organization. We don't have a centralized SRE team that engages with the team. We embed directly into the engineering team, and we operate symbiotically.
Okay. And so in some ways that sounds like it builds on Craig's point, a bit of a consulting role at the same time, but you're actually part of those dev teams. Okay. So what I'm hearing, some common themes. So we've got SREs as enablers, as consultants, as kind of stewards of safe changes, and with a high customer focus. Does that resonate with people? Excellent. So, and again, anyone in the audience, we have a packed house here. Do not be shy. Come up to the mic if you do have questions. It will make it that much more interesting if these guys don't know what you're going to ask. They know what I'm going to ask. So in the meantime, while we're waiting, I'll ask one more question. So DevOps has obviously increased in popularity, and it's kind of all over the industry these days. How would you distinguish DevOps from SRE? What are some of the distinguishing features?
So I would say I think of SRE as like a role that you're playing, and DevOps is more of a philosophy of like how you get something done. I don't think that there is a role that is DevOps. I think everyone has to do that. I think you can take the corollary and say there's ops dev as well. I think it's two sides of the same coin.
Yeah, I mean to echo that, in my opinion, I believe that it's more organizational. You know, for example, there's many different ways to do project management, from Agile to Scrum Extreme. I just think that's one way that you could organize, you know, to mm-hmm. fulfill the mission. But I don't, echoing what Andrew says, I don't believe that is the title.
Yeah, to say now.
I think the book is mostly silent on this question for the reason that we felt it was very difficult to react to something which is relatively not well defined. And so it's kind of difficult to draw bright lines when that's the case. Having said that, I think the Google SRE perspective maybe goes against, or what's the right way to put this? We're kind of closer to NoOps than DevOps, in the sense that we don't ever really want to have a system for which we would have to pay a constant headcount cost to operate. We would much rather make a system which runs autonomously or is resilient.
And I think Andrew wants to add.
The only other thing I'd add is I think, and maybe Ryan can respond for the PE side, but at least when I see SRE, there is an R for reliability, right? DevOps doesn't necessarily have that. Like, there's no actual goal that you're trying to accomplish aside from, mm-hmm. It's a style, as opposed to if you're trying to do reliability, that's a goal and you're trying to actually accomplish something, and you can put a number to that. I don't think you can do that when you say, I want to be DevOps.
In your experience, do you think that DevOps has a particular goal, or we don't have to go there, but I'm just saying, if reliability is the goal of SRE, Is there,
So I, at least in like from what I've seen, because DevOps is not a very clearly defined thing, right? Is that like when you think of it as a methodology, as a way of thinking, that means it doesn't have a goal. You can apply it to achieve a goal.
Okay. That makes sense, Craig.
So one thing that, again, back to the consultant idea, and if you think of DevOps similar to Agile, where it's this whole spectrum, and you can be anywhere along the spectrum. And so what I encourage all the members of my team is to work with the individual groups and figure out what works best for that specific group, where they are on the spectrum. I am trying to move them all to more of one extreme, where they're completely empowered, but not every team wants to do that. So my team, again, is there as a liaison, an expert in certain areas to help them push them to where they're comfortable in this entire spectrum.
Great, thanks very much. So what I'm hearing again, DevOps is more of a philosophy, SRE is more of a role, and again, I think in both cases there's some open questions as to the exact definition. It can be more challenging to define, but I think we're making some headway here. Great. We have an audience question, and say your name, please, okay. And then ask your question.
I'm Ben Goldsberry. So my question is, I think I could ask, what makes a good site reliability engineer? And we'd get a lot of very answers we'd hear. We've probably already heard at the conference. So if you had to think of the best or one of the best site reliability engineers you've ever worked with, what stood out about them to you?
That's a great question.
All of the best production engineers, and you can mostly swap and replace production engineer with site reliability engineer. All of the best production engineers I've worked with, they truly understand that this job lives and breathes on your relationships with the teams that you work with. Like there's so much technical aspect to it. Like we all know how to configure things and deploy things, and but knowing how to empower and encourage and educate other engineers who maybe aren't so familiar with this and have them get passionate about it is what really makes a truly extraordinary PE or SRE.
Well said. Do you want to say something, Dave?
Well, yeah, we stole a little thunder on the relationship side. That's very important. But I'd say as an aspect of people that we've gotten to a point to where we interview for is curiosity. Reliability itself as a discipline requires a certain amount of understanding. And especially for those of us that work in distributed and complex systems, very rarely is there the one page that explains it all. And I know, especially in our environment, if we don't have people that are curious and are willing to go out and learn and ask questions and engage with other teams and build those relationships, they will not be successful in the environment that we have.
Yeah, I was going to use the word curiosity, actually. That's very important, engagement generally, as qualities of personality. But I think another important thing is good prioritization. So often we find ourselves in an incident management situation, there's something urgent to do, and we need to be able to go, I am curious about how this thing works, but I cannot be curious about it now. I have to do this other thing now, and so on.
So I want to really echo that. I actually think if you take two engineers of similar technical caliber, and one is a better prioritizer than the one that can prioritize better is going to be the rock star engineer, and the one, and it's the same. It's going to happen every single time.
Yeah, I mean, not to anything too radical, but what I can say is it's not just about technical depths. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of things about that are hard, and the reason why I believe it's hard to teach this is judgments, in addition to relationship building.
Great. Okay, so quite a few characteristics there, and again, not just the technical depth. It's a range of other skills, the interpersonal skills, and otherwise.
Thank you.
Great. Thank you. We have another question. Thank you very much. And again, continue to funnel to the mic if you do have questions. Great. Say your name and your question, please.
So my name is Bob Strakansky. I'm from MailChimp. We have been talking the last 2 days about the roles and responsibilities of a site reliability engineer. I like to use the equivalency of we actually play shortstop for our company's baseball team. Like we field all the balls and we either throw them to first base or we pick them up or whatever. So what do you guys think are some of the non-issues that SREs should not take control of? It's very easy to say, yeah, I'll pick that up, yeah, I'll pick that up, yeah, I'll pick that up. But how do your teams prioritize what work SREs should do and should not do?
Very good question. Niall?
So I guess Google, just talking about my experience, there's one hard and fast rule, which is that we have this split between 50% project and 50% operational work. I guess we're in the fortunate position of being able to do that, but one of the things that being hardcore about this enables us to do is if there is a system which would necessarily consume more of that 50% cap because it's broken by design or it's going through incredible growing pains or whatever, in Google we're allowed to say, I'm sorry, this is too broken. We have to spend time on fixing this on a project basis rather than reacting to it all the time, right? And that's been a super useful rule.
In Facebook, because we have the symbiotic relationship and we function as one team, like the prioritization and it really comes down to the team gets together and builds a single sort of unified roadmap to decide what's important and how to divide responsibility between PE and software engineering. And there's kind of a give and take to it. Like sometimes software engineering will say, okay, this is a more maybe traditional operational thing, but what you guys are working on right now is more important for you to finish, so we'll take this on and maybe ask you for some help to understand how to do it effectively.
Andrew? Yeah, I think everybody's kind of said the word role here, which I think is really important, because if you take a software engineering team, a pure software engineering team, and they don't have an SRE or PE attached to them, that work still has to be done, right? It's not work that gets dropped on the floor. Well, sometimes it does, but some amount of that work is going to get done. And so you have to, we have the similar sort of style where you have a team that's mixed and you build a prioritization list and there's give and take. You have to say, okay, I'm a SWE, I'm going to do some of this work today, and you're SRE and you're going to do some of this work tomorrow. It goes back and forth.
So it sounds like fluid boundaries are key.
Yeah, exactly. My thing is that one of the qualities we look for is people that are humble. So not saying, we'll never do something like this, because there is strong ownership in a symbiotic relationship kind of insane. So it's less about, more about not being typecast and more about being a member of a team than it is what I will and will not do.
And Craig, do you want to take the final point?
So one of the challenges that we have is as we're trying to move away from centralized ops to more of an SRE role, one of the things I really encourage everybody on my team is if you do a particular job, for example, deployments, and if you do that same thing 3-4 times in a row, then you're making a mistake. If you have not engaged somebody else on the team to help out with that specific thing, you're not helping to empower them to deploy it themselves or manage the configuration themselves. You're becoming that one central person, because it's not in just because it's not in the central group doesn't make it any less bad.
Great. Is that good?
Yeah, great. Thank
Excellent.
You.
Excellent. Thanks very much. Come on up to the mic, say your name and your question.
So I'm Dong from Baidu. So my question is, recently we are talking about more and more artificial intelligence. So how do you guys think you see artificial intelligence in the system operation? Do you think some days the AI can replace people in this such area?
So who wants to weigh in on the role of AI within SRE?
I never thought about necessarily AI, but I mean, there's a lot of tool kind of taking that. There's a lot of tooling aspect and a lot of automation, which is just a necessity of scale. You know, you cannot continue to do manual work to amplify your team. And one thing we like to see is SREs, when they're performing their job, would elevate the team to not do as much manual work. And there's a lot in the SRE book about the exact same thing, about toil reduction and making sure that, you know, things are being more audible, more scalable. So not necessarily true autonomous, you know, automation, but around that area.
I'd say the other portion of that is that there is some sort of natural break point when you build systems like that where you do want humans to interact with it. I haven't given it a lot of thought into how far AI would be able to take that, but I do think that you should not build. When you do automation, you want to make sure you have these breakpoints where a human is going to verify something. It's because the system will invariably break. Tear itself down in some way if you don't.
And Al, do you want to say something?
Yeah, the question is whether or not the robot overlords are going to keep us alive longer because we're looking after them, or because we're going to, or whether we'll be the first to go because we understand how they work. I think, to be slightly more serious, the level at which the reliability engineering applies can move up the stack as the underlying resilience of the subsystems improves, perhaps by injecting AI into figuring out what could be done about resolving problem X or problem Y, but there will still be meta levels of, oh, it turns out that in fact when you have these two systems in this cluster, they war with each other, and that's a level that's not modeled in either of their systems, I guess.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Next up, John.
Hi, I'm John, also from Google. So at Google, I think, and I think you've said this already, we have a pretty hard rule about not spending too much of an S3's time in ops load. And I think that's because we have a very high value on an S3's time at Google. And I guess given our hiring situation, it's understandable and our size. But what I'm wondering is, to what extent is that sort of cultural feature of an extremely high value of an S3's time necessary in an organization's culture for SRE to work and survive? Or is that, am I missing something much more important that's really needed in a culture to make SRE be possible?
So I think this speaks to the supply and demand question. Who wants to tackle that? Okay, sounds good. Thanks, Dave.
So I'll echo something that Jonah Horowitz on my team said yesterday. He started his talk with, how many of you are here to hire SREs, right? And hands of everyone in the room goes up, right? How many of you have been looking for that for a long time? The hands stay up. SREs are difficult to find, and they're expensive. And that's because the expertise that we find in these people is a combination of some traditional education and a whole lot of experience. And that's not something that there's generally a fresh flow of in the workspace like there are for other things. I'm not sure that we're going to find a way to create a lot of new SREs out of whole cloth without having a system that raises people up and that kind of experience to provide that kind of benefit and judgment that's necessary in reliability, especially cross-functional role.
But doing a thought experiment, if you could magically, you know, clone everyone at this table or clone everyone at this conference, would that be the right thing to do? I think John might have been touching on that as well. If you would. Would you hire an infinite number of SREs if you could? Was that, am I misinterpreting
right, just,
that?
Right, I think I'm saying that I see the high value placed on SRE's time as a key feature of Google the organization, that we will not just throw SREs into the mill to solve a problem. And I want to know if you guys agree with that is a key feature of an organization. Or if not, what is the key feature of an organization that makes it possible to have SREs in that organization? Because it seems to me like not every organization has SREs, and there are some that are trying to do SRE and maybe failing spectacularly because they don't have this.
So how important is scarcity effectively, right? And, sure. And actually, I think Brian wants to say something first, and then Andrew.
So, like, scarcity and, like, the desire to, like, prevent SRE from, or PE from, like, doing too much operational work, I see is mostly reactionary because of the history of where production engineering and SRE came from. We came from the traditional sort of like operations side of things quite frequently, right? The knee-jerk, like, oh, I won't spend more than 50% of my time doing operational work is really quite reactionary, I think, and I don't think it's key to the role. On healthy production engineering engagements inside Facebook, there's no need for that because the team itself throws everybody into the fire equally.
I actually think if you zoom out, right, like the goal of the entire organization, right, is to ship product and build features and to like make the company go forward, right? And so the way we kind of look at it is there's like this keeping the lights on tax, right, which is like the operational work that everyone's talking about. And you always want to pay that down, regardless of whether you're an SRE or you're in software engineering. You just have to have that load go down. So I think that you don't, sure, infinite number of SREs as long as they're working on things towards reliability, but like if they're working towards the operational component, it doesn't really make a lot of sense. And I think the same applies on software engineering side. If they're paying a high tax to, you know, do massive amounts of code refactor and do things like that, which is essentially not pushing the product forward, you always want to find ways to push like either your foundation or your feature set forward. Like, and you should not be spending the time doing the operational work if you can avoid it.
Right. I mean, I'm more speaking to like the word like 50% or some type of hard and fast number. And unfortunately, due to the scale and resourcing, the number of individuals in the company's time, sometimes that's just not possible. You know, when you're new and young, you just got to do whatever needs to do to serve the customer. So I think that's more of a luxury afforded maybe in larger organizations, where smaller type startup environments, sometimes there's seasonalities where there's a lot more of this and a lot less of that. But the reality is, at the end of the day, kind of echo what Andrew said, is that, you know, customers still have to be served.
Very quickly, I just wanted to say, I think everyone understands the value of operational work, but operational work raises the floor rather than raising the ceiling of your organization. And so if SREs weren't scarce and we understood their role as being primarily operational, we would pour them in to this thing and it would raise the floor, and that's fine, but your organization isn't probably actually going to make significant progress other than that. So actually, if you understand SREs as being software folks or systems folks who are trying to make progress towards a significant business goal, then you actually don't, well, you do want to be able to pour them arbitrarily, but you aren't going to find them that way because we don't have cloning yet, et cetera.
Okay, and I just want to key in on something that Jeremy said for a second. So, you know, for a smaller, newer company, you know, for startups or whatever, does SRE only make sense past a certain size? Is there a...
No.
Okay, good. Let's put that one to rest.
So to echo some of the points from this morning, you need a diverse set of people to form a group, right? Different people bring different perspectives and can help solve problems in multiple different ways. So one of the other things you have to look at is, you know, the operational costs. You know, somebody who understands the code at a much deeper level can help out in a much longer term way, right? So if you have a bunch of SREs who might not have the depth in a particular service, right? If they're the only ones looking at it, there's only so much impact they can make, right? But if you involve the rest of the team, right, which has much deeper knowledge, which might be a piece that's affecting whatever's causing the current operational issue, I think you have a much longer term view of the problem. Does that make sense?
Great.
One thing at Pinterest is that we celebrate that a belief that diverse teams make better outcomes. Mm-hmm. You know, and finding one individual in a role that can do it all is extremely rare and hard to scale a company by.
I think the SRE concept in Google started off in 2003 or thereabouts, when we were very much smaller than we are today. Yeah. So there's actually quite a range of sizes that make sense out of it.
Yeah, I mean, you can have like an SRE or a PE kind of role in very, very small organizations, as Niall said, because software engineering and production engineering are really like two sides of the same coin. It's symbiotic, it's complementary. It's different ways of focusing on the same thing.
Great, excellent.
So
thank you, John.
If I could try to just make it clear, I think your answers are along the lines of that there isn't really an organization where it doesn't make sense to have SRE, where the culture would be incompatible because it's just so damn ingenious and obvious in retrospect.
Yay.
I can't argue.
Okay. Now, thanks, John. Let's bring up our next speaker here, or next questioner.
Hi. My name's John Arney. I'm from PayPal. And in the very, very early days of software engineering, we just wrote code. And after a while, we decided as an industry, as a culture, that design patterns were a really good way to model problems and well-known solutions. Does the panel have any thoughts on the role of what I'll call SRE design patterns emerging as the industry matures to sort of well-known problems, well-known solutions, just to help us evolve the industry as a whole?
I mean, certainly for like distributed systems, of which Facebook has quite a few, like one of the roles that production engineering plays is like during design discussions for new software, we sit in, and because production engineering, we have a lot of experience with these sorts of things, we sit in and we say, hey, you know, I've seen this kind of thing built a number of different ways, here's the ones that have worked best. So we do bring that kind of, I wouldn't call it exactly design patterns, maybe architecture patterns is a slightly better phrase for it, but there, for certain things, there do seem to be like more obvious ways to build them.
I think for process, that totally makes sense, right? Like if you look at like so many things that we do in terms of process, in terms of incident management, things like that, aren't novel to our industry, right? And they actually come from other industries. So I think that those patterns are already there, right? It's just a matter of like looking around and seeing them from other places and applying them.
now?
Yeah, there are a lot of patterns. I think it partially depends on what your locus of concern is, whether you're concerned about how to engineer distributed systems. A bunch of people have come to me internally and said, hey, why don't we write edition 2 or book number 2 about how to do this? I think, personally speaking, that we should probably, even within Google, be able to cut down on the number of differently implemented key value pair servers before. What, is that a pattern I hear out in the audience? Before we could pretend to be useful in this respect. But I do think that there is space for common approaches to be documented better, and like we're doing our best.
Great, thank you.
One more point. Go ahead, Craig.
I mean, one thing is that SRE brings an organization is a culture of technical excellence, which I believe that more of those patterns are being defined. And in our view, process is just defined culture. So it's basically how to change the culture of everybody's organizations to fit more of that.
And Craig.
And I think there's also even a higher level thing that we bring to the table. An example, when I started at this relatively small company, they had no metrics, right? And that seems really silly or absurd, but they looked at log files. When you have 2 machines, it's not a big deal. When you have 200, obviously it's a lot different. So those relatively simple ideas aren't always in developers' minds.
Hi, my name is Kasky. Earlier you guys were talking about the SRE team and the product team having a shared roadmap and backlog and working together to do, the SREs are doing some of the engineering work, the product team's doing other engineering work. What do you say to the person who says, well, wait a minute, isn't all of this really supposed to be in the product already? Why do we need a separate engineering discipline to be reliability focused when all the work really is just part of the product? It's criticism I've seen.
Because it turns out that if you don't have somebody specifically looking after it, it doesn't get looked after. Because the other teams are driven by features and product market fit and so on and so forth.
All right.
Yeah, I mean, like, not every engineer finds reliability as sort of like sexy work, right? Like, it can be kind of, I would hesitate to say boring work, but it can be kind of like much more involved and much more detail oriented in some cases, and not everybody's interested in that. They want to build something sort of flashy. So having a distribution of people who do find that sort of work, like they are passionate about it, right, can make sure that it stays on the roadmap in a way that might be ignored otherwise.
Another thing you'll see with developers is they get very focused on their specific service, right? They don't necessarily take a step back. And one of the things I encourage everybody in my team is to look at the other applications that their particular service talks to, and look at the impact of ramping something up to 50% or just turning on this new feature. Is that going to take down something else? That is not something a developer often thinks about, but an SRE, at least in my team, does need to think about.
Right. I mean, going back to this morning's keynote about team makeup and role makeup, it's one of those things where I believe that if a goal is shared by everybody, it's hard, to be shared by everyone, it's owned by nobody. So it's one of those things that could be an SRE as in that team can help elevate the technical excellence of the product.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Who do we have next?
Hi, I'm Nick, currently at Spotify. I've been doing SRE stuff for a couple of years now, and I was indoctrinated at Google in the sort of, Google philosophy of SRE. And one of the interesting things I found is that I felt like I was a sort of a sysadmin when I started, or a systems engineer. But obviously coding is an important skill for an SRE to have, and now 5 or 6 years later, I feel like I'm quite comfortable with how I can code and quite comfortable with my knowledge around processes. But I actually feel like my operations knowledge has gotten weaker over that time because I don't practice it as much. Do you feel like it's important to practice that operational knowledge somehow as an SRE? And if so, any tips on how to do it when you're focusing a lot of the time on building software and coding things?
Can you define operational knowledge? Like, what do you mean by operational knowledge?
I'm thinking of, debugging things, kernel tuning, like low-level networking stuff, just keeping up to date with changes in that space and, keeping your skills strong.
Break things on purpose.
Breaking things on purpose. I mean, if you really do want to practice, but the other way of looking at that is that if you feel that your skills on that are getting rusty, I mean, isn't that kind of a good thing? You've got a problem everyone wants to have.
But also, I mean, I think it all depends on the size of the organization, right? Because, I mean, not everybody on this panel has the luxury of a formal capacity planning team or a kernel tuning team. So it may be also that, you know, based on that, how many hats you have to wear, it just might be based on that.
Dave, did you have a follow-up?
Yeah, also I'd say, no, we specialize a little bit. Part of the responsibility of our SRE team is to know the people in the organization that are spending time on those things. We work a lot with our performance team, so that I know who to go to if I think this is a performance-related thing and I have an expert I can go to and not only keep my skills sharp, but make sure that somebody's not getting amateur answers from me, whether it's something performance-related or kernel tuning-related or operating system choice-related or network-related.
So by maintaining those conversations with experts in the sort of in their field in the company, you feel like that keeps your skills strong there?
It keeps my skills strong. It also reminds me, frankly, of what I don't know. And when I need to make sure I go get the people that do know.
All right, we're going to go to Niall and then Craig.
Yep. Just very briefly, we do talk in the book about some of the downside of automation when the system kind of looks after itself so well that when you need to intervene, you've kind of forgotten what you have to do to fix it. And that is a downside. But actually, to my mind, it's all about the allocation of time. So instead of moving from a position where you find you no longer have to regularly do thing X, you explicitly schedule it in. Every 6 weeks, I will spend a half day on familiarizing myself with how the hell this thing worked again anyway. And that's often just enough to keep your hand in, so to speak.
To echo the idea of specialists, my time at LinkedIn, we're growing relatively quickly, and we hired more and more people who were specialized in a certain thing. A good example is LinkedIn is, well, at least when I was there, a big Java shop. And so Java tuning is, you know, an art all in itself. And there were experts within engineering that were specifically good with Java tuning. And so we leaned on them pretty heavily. Performance people were really good at other fields. So this goes back to the interpersonal aspects and working with teams, working with other people within the company. And when you don't have a particular skill, finding somebody who does. At scale, there's almost always somebody who can help you.
Thank you very much.
I'd actually add one other thing, which is like I think everybody answered this in the context of like what you're doing at work. Find a problem outside of work and solve it that way, right? Like I wanted to try standing up a blog server and use Docker to do it. Like I had no reason to do that, right? But like I wanted to understand how Docker worked and like what were the various components behind it. So I did that, right? So like you can do this without having to find a reason to do this at work.
Thank you very much.
Thank you,
Nick.
Liz. Hi, I'm Liz. I'm from Google. And my question is, how essential do you feel that geographic diversity is to SRE? Because I know that kind of on one hand, Netflix has, we are the core five SREs, we are in one place. On the other hand, at Google, it's virtually impossible to spin up a team in just one location. We kind of favor doing at least two locations. So kind of how essential is that to you?
For me, that's really easy. Actually, it's the opposite. Having people geo-spaced when you only have 50 engineers, that actually creates more problems than it solves. Obviously, at LinkedIn, it was very much the opposite. But currently, at the startup, we actually don't want them geo-spaced. I really want my team in the office with most of the other engineers.
So the team configuration is scale. It varies with scale. It's another Brian, and then Dave.
So Facebook is, of course, geo-distributed. We have offices in various parts of the world. And the way we do it in production engineering is that we make sure that the production engineers for a given service or for a given team, like, not only, like, are in the same region, but, like, we try to, like, physically co-locate the desks so they're literally part of the team. They go to lunch together with the team. And then we deal with sort of the cross-region latency between, like, team dependencies rather than intra-team dependencies.
And Dave?
Yeah, to answer the everybody in the same set of buildings, for Netflix, it was actually part of our culture reinforcement. We found it difficult in a few experiments where we had people far away to maintain some of the culture aspects that were important to us. So it became more important actually for us to co-locate even further so that we can get those diverse people into the same room on a regular basis and solve problems. It definitely causes some challenges. You know, we did our 130 new countries all at once global announcement,
oh,
and
gosh.
I'm... I'm sure we're going to find some new interesting problems that everyone else has solved, and we frankly hope to get the benefit of coming to, you know, the Googles and the Facebooks to say, hey, so I heard you probably had this problem at one point or another.
Cool, thank you.
Come on up. And actually, while we're waiting for this question, if there are other questions, please come up to the mic. Is there anybody that has a question that just feels awkward about getting out of their seat and over to the mic? All right, don't be shy. All right.
Hi, I'm Disha, and I'm from the ING Bank. And we're just starting up with SRE. So I have a few questions, actually two of them. You initially mentioned something about central versus embedded teams, right? In case of in embedded teams, it's understandable you have like people in different teams. But with central teams, how do you pick the DevOps teams that you have in deciding, okay, this is the one that I should go to first rather than this? Because like in a bigger organization, you will have like hundreds of DevOps teams. Which applications, which DevOps teams do you think should be the first ones that you should aim at as an SRE?
Niall? Okay, Niall and then Andrew. Yep.
The question is, how do we prioritize the allocation of SRE time versus?
Yes, because you could have like, even when you prioritize, there could be like two completely separate product teams that need the same level of prioritization, but you only have limited SREs.
Okay. I think that's a leveling question. I think you have to find somebody in the business who will say, yes, this is definitely more important than this other thing. Don't listen to those people. If there is genuinely no objective metric on which to make a break decision, right? So this product has $10 million, this product has $1 million. Well, okay, I'll probably put the time on the thing, which is more revenue or whatever. But if you get down to kind of internal stuff, like there actually is no clear way to pick a thing, then I think you have to get somebody in the business who's aware of what you're doing and so on to say, this one first of all, and then you can feedback loop on that if it turns out the decision was wrong, like fail fast. And
say if you, for example, if you as an SRE team is looking at two or five teams which need your help, and you have certain KPIs defined for yourself, okay, this is if, say, availability is coming to 80% where you want 90%, this is my highest priority, so I go for this. So do you like also prioritize on your own KPIs which you define to kind of pick up tasks for yourself? Like if there is an equally requirement from different teams, how do you then use your KPIs for prioritization?
I think there's an assumption that we actually own the KPIs, but it's like the
KPIs. I'm just asking, do you use KPIs then?
So I think for most of us, it's shared with the business. And so the KPI that we're judging it against is like a business KPI.
Yeah.
So there should be a sort of global prioritization that you can do, which is what Niall was getting at. I think the other one is right around leverage, right? Like if you have two things that are more internal to SRE and how do you staff them, then it becomes which is going to be a higher lever to move that business metric, which may be an external metric. But you need to have someone on the business side make that call in a lot of ways.
And if you're literally unable to find somebody to break that deadlock, then you can go, well, if we work with this team or this product over here, in the course of working with them, we will build useful systems A, B, and C. Whereas if we work with this team over here, we will build useful systems A and B. And go, okay, well, this serves our interests a little bit more, so we'll start off with that.
Craig?
As I was hiring more people and we were trying to move away from the centralized ops to more of an SRE idea, the team that got the most attention was the ones where the devs were the most engaged, where I could see that there would be more positive feedback quicker and be a better example to make this movement away from something I think was not going to work to something I thought was better longer term. So it was a combination. It wasn't so much the hard numbers thing as I thought this had the biggest chance of success and proving this is where we should be going.
Okay, Brian, we'll let you have the last word.
Yeah, I mean, so everybody, I think we're all pretty much in consensus about how this works. I wanted to add a couple of clarifying things. This is that, like, really, this doesn't have to do with centralized versus non-centralized production engineering, right? Like, just because production engineering chooses the embedded style doesn't mean that we don't have these same sorts of problems. We have to decide, like, where to staff up, where not to staff up. And, like, all else being equal, like, we'll probably prefer the team that's, like, is going to get us more bang for our buck in terms of like spreading the culture of like how to think about reliability as like an interesting, like as an interesting and worthwhile problem.
Great. Thank you.
I have just one other question, okay. And it's building on a question which came up previously. So we talked about architecture patterns and design patterns. So is, because Google's, Facebook's, Netflix, LinkedIn all have been like the forerunners in SRE. So have there been like plans to like kind of open source or outsource a little bit, open source best practices and things like that? Because I haven't seen much online.
I could recommend a good book on that topic.
I just won that book, so I'm really looking forward to reading that up. But otherwise, in general, like this is one conference I know, but I haven't seen much. Like I looked it up myself because
so
I'm trying to set it up.
Facebook Production Engineering. We've started doing a series of blog posts actually to start to kind of talk more publicly about like how we approach these problems.
Okay, great.
I can speak. LinkedIn does something similar. They are trying to engage more and more with their blogs.
Thanks very much.
I know we've I'm just jumping in.
I know,
just jumping
just
in.
Do it, Dave.
I know
there
we've actually recently started reaching out to specifically the people we have around us and trying to bring together more regular conversations about how do we get this done? How do you think about it? What are the kind of patterns that you regularly bump into? What are the things you have been able to solve? What are the things that you haven't been able to solve? I think it's an opportunity for all of us as an industry to get better at that. It's very easy, and I think we've seen this in our own organizations, to become hyper-focused on the problem that's in front of you and realize nine other people have the same problem. The realization is everybody in the room has similar problems, and we really only, you know, are managed to keep a little bit more hair on our heads if we're willing to talk to each other about the problems we have, how we solve them, and the ones we haven't been able to solve.
Exactly why the question, so thanks.
Great. Sorry about that. You were in my blind spot. So. Great. We have another audience question.
So, I get the sense that there's a cultural shift here. So hopefully I'm right. So I think that the original or the culture that I was, you know, been working in for the last 20 years is that software engineering creates a product. They say it works like this. They give it to operations. An operations job is to make sure the product never fails, that it stays up, and so forth. They have no architectural role in designing the product. They have to try to find a way to externally fix it. And I feel like this move to SRE is about bringing a partnership between engineering and what was traditional operations and giving some architectural control or architectural input from what was the operations team into development. If you've seen that cultural shift in your organization, what were the levers of that change? How did you make that cultural change?
I'll take
Dave,
one.
Then.
So that was definitely one of the shifts I went through when I joined Netflix. I had the same kind of experience. It was the traditional development. Here's a nifty black box. I really hope you can figure it out. And one thing that was starting at Netflix and we were able to push further forward is that we realized that oftentimes that over the wall to operations kind of pattern was a horrible crutch for software development teams. They weren't actually given the context and the ability to build the expertise to understand how to make their software better so that the operations people didn't have to try to figure out how to run it or restart it or read the log files. So part of our encouragement is as soon as we give that to software developers, I really don't need a centralized operations team because I have the people engaged that put the things together. They're the experts on it, and they now have the expertise and information and culture required to be able to own and operate their own kinds of things, so there's not even a fence left for people to throw things over to operations.
Yeah, it's definitely a cultural shift from like 5 or 6 years ago. Like the cultural shift was sort of like just like at the inflection point, I think, when I joined Facebook about 4 years ago, and the observation was is that like no software engineer like is actively wanting like no production engineer like wants to produce something that's crappy, right? Like everybody wants to build the best thing that they can build, and so by blending the roles, by acknowledging that it's different expertise, like you wind up helping everyone build something that they wanted to build in the first place.
Greg?
Yeah, LinkedIn went through this right when I joined. They were moving away from a centralized NOC and a centralized application operations team. And one of the big things that Bruno, the VP at LinkedIn, talked about is executive buy-in. What you really need is the all of the management has to be behind it, because this will impact, you know, business deliverables. This will impact engineering. This impacts the entire company. So they all have to be behind it. You will have missteps. There will be problems. And everybody has to be committed to this long-term goal. And one of the other things we did was you kind of have to, what I touched on a few minutes ago, you kind of have to have the demo team. You know, this team that shows that this does work and shows to the rest of the org that this is the model which we can move it forward. That helps sell it to everybody else saying, oh, why is their stuff so easy to deploy? Why can those devs make configuration changes themselves? And you point to them and say, well, because they implemented these procedural changes.
Niall, do you want to weigh in?
Yeah, I was just going to say we in companies or organizations, we have models for how the world is, and we build things into our models in order to tell us how to organize the company for the best possible outcome and so on. And we shift between models as the environment we're in changes and so on. Okay, so a very abstract way of basically saying that the previous model that you're talking about, where we have this hard split between development and operations, is probably increasingly less tenable the more complicated the software gets, right? Because it's a leaky abstraction, right? And the abstraction is that I can throw this over the boundary to you and you can do this useful work. But as the software becomes more complicated, has a more complicated environment that it's embedded within, talks to more things and scales and so on and so forth, the central underlying point of that model, which is you can be context unaware of how it does its stuff and still do your job successfully, I don't think that's true anymore.
I want to build a little bit on that really quickly, which is that like it's a business driver, right? Like at the end of the day, right, the reason that this cultural shift happens is because, you know, in Google's case, they wanted a very high reliability number and they built an incentive structure that actually makes that work. If you have a problem, this is a solution to that problem. There may be other solutions to that problem. Throwing it over the wall does work for some companies, right? They can get those numbers. They can, if the goal is like 4 9s, 5 9s, you can do that potentially in that model. It's really what does the business need, and this culture shift works for what we're trying to do here.
Great. I just want to do a quick time check. We've got, I think, about 5 minutes left, if I recall. Who is still queuing? Do we have two people? Excellent. So I think we're going to call it after those two questions. We will come to the mic, sir. Tell us who you are.
My name is Brian. Largely, a lot of the companies here focus on making decisions based on the metrics that are available to the companies. And so I have a very simple question, which is, how do you measure and evaluate the performance of your SREs?
Okay. So we'll refer that to the manager's panel. Okay. Liz is telling me to do that. Yeah. Okay. So yeah, I think that's scheduled for this afternoon, so we can weigh in there. Great. Yes, sir. You have the final word. No pressure.
So we've been talking about the high level stuff, automation, performance tuning, all that, you know, mind work. But sometimes somebody just has to put in the earplugs, go in the data center, and change out the broken machine. So are those people SREs? How do you guys manage that? So, and another example is someone has to debug a failed GBIC and replace or a broken fiber connection. And like, there's a certain amount of just real janitorial work has to be done. Who does it? Different levels.
Go with Jeremy.
I think that all depends. I mean, one thing about Pinterest is we're 100% on Amazon Web Services. So some of those things, you know, having somebody go do FRU replacements in a data center, it doesn't necessarily fit our environment. But there is a definite skill set for what kind of like the, you know, like Dr. House, differential diagnosis, you know, debugging from first principles. It's just different. It's not necessarily we do or don't do that. It's just instead of a failed GBIC, maybe you have bad routes between data centers as a black box. But ultimately, at the end of the day, if the incentives are aligned to deliver the product that you're actually embedded with development, the things will turn out right.
Craig?
Currently, my startup is the same way. We're 100% AWS, so it doesn't really apply. But LinkedIn did have several operations groups. There was a systems group that dealt with essentially OS and down, which included rack and stack reported into them. So hard drives, failures, things like that, all reported into that team. That wasn't mutually exclusive from SRE. It was a whole different role. at a very high level, this is no different than marketing is different than sales, right? One doesn't really get rid of the other.
Go ahead, Niall. I have something to say too, but I will let you say it.
Sure. Just really quickly, I think SREs can do that. And that's one of the interesting things about us, that we're at every level of the stack, which is much harder than other professions, I guess. But people who did only that, I would have trouble understanding them as SREs.
I would say there's definitely a push, though, to expand the cultural influence, I guess, of SRE at Google in particular. So hardware operations, data center operations, network operations. So I think people see the value in some of the key, you know, underlying facets of SRE and want to bring that SRE goodness into other parts of the org, at least in spirit. Great. All right, everyone. So a couple of, just to wrap up the panel, let's thank our speakers, our panelists today. for sharing some insight into who is and what is SRE. I just wanted to also point out, lunch, I think, is next, but we are also going to be doing a quick Q&A about the SRE book if anyone is interested in sticking around. And then if your name was drawn out of the hat for doing the quiz at the Google booth, we will be distributing copies at the back of the room and signing those for those that are interested. So that's all we've got. And thank you very much for attending today. Okay.